which is something that is a pattern of most of the women that he talks about. He, when talking about Bertha, he's like, oh, she flattered me, said, I don't care that you're an ugly little spud, I'll be with you. And then turns out, oh no, she's off doing sex with other guys. Same thing with Celine, she's like, I don't care that you're a weird little tater man, whoops, I have a hot soldier boyfriend, surprise, I do care. And then here too with Blanche, when she's trying to flirt with him, and she's like, oh, who needs pretty men, I think uggos are great. She's like, he is, every woman he meets is like, it's fine that you're not hot, but you got money, right? Hey, everybody. It may not seem like it, but Lillian and I have been struggling to get into the studio today. So the fact that we're here is wonderful. Fingers crossed that this keeps going.
Yeah.
Hi.
And for some of you, you're getting to watch this on video, and we might do like a weird outfit change in the middle of this. We decide to record the rest tomorrow.
That's right. Who knows? Thank you for saying that at the top of the episode, because yeah, figuring out my internet situation, I have to now be like, oh, that's right. People are looking at me. Smile. So anyway, this great energy that we're bringing to today's episode, hi.
But it's gonna get even greater, because we're talking about something I'm very excited to talk about. Are you excited to talk about this, Piper?
I'm excited, but I'm definitely gonna be a Rochester hater on this episode.
I know.
So get ready for
maybe it's hard not to be.
Some bumming out. Aren't you glad you're here?
If you're a big Rochester defender, you're gonna be sending us a beefy email after this.
So today we are talking about 4 of the other women,
yes,
in Rochester's life. We're starting with Blanche. We're then talking about Celine. We're then talking about Giacintia and Clara. So,
yes.
And we're going to be going through kind of just like, you know, what role do these women play in this novel? Why are they set up this way? At least it's the way my brain is kind of thinking, mm-hmm, about it. What does this mean about like Jane's perspective on these people? Mm-hmm. What does this mean about Charlotte Bronte's perspective and all kinds of stuff? And then what it contributes to the story and how it affects how we read this tale. At least that's how, mm-hmm, I'm kind of approaching it. So
for sure. I have that as well. The only one that I actually like, obviously Giacinta and Clara are not even mentioned in any of the adaptions that, mm-hmm, we've watched.
Yeah.
Certainly not by name. I can't recall a Stay speech where he even goes, and then I had a bunch of other affairs and they also weren't good. But for Blanche, I do have notes on a couple of the interpretations of her, because she is a character who is often interpreted. And I think it's really interesting to see people's understanding of her role in the story.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to start with Blanche.
Yeah.
I have just a few little, like, for sure fact details, because I think similarly when we had our Bertha episode, I for one at least began, I'm like, okay, so we have an unreliable narrator here, and I mean, mm-hmm, that because the way that these women are talked about are either from Rochester or other people describing them, and Rochester for sure has tainted feelings, mm-hmm, and would want to sway your opinion one way or the other. And then for Blanche especially, she is definitely set up as this kind of rival and is literally narratively brought in by Rochester to like evoke certain feelings and persuade Jane's decision making. So for most of this situation, Blanche is described from Jane's perspective, which comes at a rather competitive angle. So these are all things that we need to keep in mind when knowing like what we're given about these characters comes from these biased places. So yeah. Some of the facts that we know for sure. Well, first of all, Blanche is first mentioned in chapter 16. And we first know about her from what Miss Fairfax says about her. We know just kind of basic things. We're going to go into these details, but basically she is beautiful. She's accomplished. She doesn't have a lot of like money. Mm-hmm. And she's 25 and single. That's what we have.
Yeah.
That's Blanche.
She also has dark brown hair.
Yes.
Which I like to point out because a lot of the adaptions make her blonde,
mm-hmm,
which I think is a character choice based off of the changing beauty standards of now versus then, and speaking to different cultures and trying to be like, she's supposed to be the epitome of beauty, and this dark brown hair is the epitome of beauty at the time.
Right. Absolutely. No, I was going to mention something similar. In fact, I was just before this call watching a video essay of this woman who talks about just like fashion through the decades and different mm-hmm. kinds of things about how they change with different trends. And she was going on this whole thing about why pink is now associated as a feminine color. And mm-hmm. through that kind of progression of the color pink, it's often associated with like a blonde woman and what that person's role in society kind of is, at least from an outside perspective. Huh. So I think you're absolutely right. I think the more modern movies and versions almost always make her blonde. And there's a whole conversation to be had about that.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. But I also noted down, my first notes are also on the narrator. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that is particularly interesting to me that I hadn't thought about until we started looking at the characters in this particular way is, so obviously we did a whole episode on Bertha, but the women in Rochester's life with a potential for romance, like romantically, mm-hmm. are the women we're talking about in this episode and Bertha and Jane. Mm-hmm. The only other woman who Jane actually gets to see and not just hear Rochester's description of is Blanche. And I think that's so interesting to, as like one of the things I was looking at was how much does that change the way I trust Jane's opinion of people to align with Rochester's opinion of people?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I do think I agree. I agree. I think Jane and Rochester agree on Blanche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. No, that's a great point because, yeah, I was looking at both contexts where someone else is describing Blanche, either like Mrs. Fairfax, Rochester, or even Jane upon like reflection, but then also examining passages where it's simply like Jane observing Blanche, mm-hmm. which when we talked about this in the book, because those are mostly happening in these kind of long drawing room scenes during this party where mm-hmm. Jane is forced to sit there. Because Rochester's like, well, I can't make you jealous unless you are actively watching me flirt with your competition. So you have to be in this room. So she is like observing her and having all of these thoughts where she's like, oh, she was this and she was that and blah, blah, blah. And I said in that book chapter episode, I was like, Jane is very judgmental, but she's also an 18-year-old girl and this is her rival and who is like contending with her against her crush. So, I mean, relatable, but also like she's not this perfect saint who's sitting there like a Helen would be. I bet if we were in Helen's brain in the same situation, she would be like, oh, well, you know, she was rather pompous perhaps, but I'm sure she has a good reason for being that way. Like she would give Blanche the benefit of the doubt. Jane is like, this bitch. She's like, I'm better than you. You don't even know.
And Jane is like, I think this is the judgiest we see Jane. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so interesting because everyone else that Jane is this judgy with, I also truly hate mm-hmm. with the fire of a thousand suns. And I just will like never, like I'm never going to have sympathy for Broccoli. I can tell the story about why Broccoli thinks he's a good guy. I hate him. Mm-hmm. Aunt Reed is in a tough position. I have slightly more sympathy for her than I do Broccoli, but otherwise the worst. Mm-hmm. But the other, like those are the other characters that Jane hates as much as she seems to hate Blanche. And I don't like Blanche. Like when we read her section in the book, the very first thing I said about her, and I stand by this a little bit, is that she's a bitch. Mm-hmm. And she is. But I don't know that she deserves Jane's hate.
Yeah, no, I don't think she deserves Jane's hate. And I think one thing that I am going to be focusing on the most when talking about Blanche anyway is, and it's something I'm going to talk about with all of these women, is this idea of, we talk a lot about that other podcast that we love, the Hot and Bothered podcast, mm-hmm, when they did their mm-hmm. reading of Jane Eyre, they talked a lot about like who in every scene has power or control over situations. Mm-hmm. Blanche is someone I think who never once in her life has autonomy over what is going to happen to her. She will never really have the opportunity to make real genuine decisions about her own life unless she like marries someone and becomes the lady of a household, and then she will have that chance. Until then, she has to simply play this game. And it's something that we've also talked a lot about when we were talking about the Emma 2020 mm-hmm. adaptation, is when you are a woman of a certain class born into this society where you don't have, you're not like a working woman who can go out and like make money or have a career of some kind. You're not like a middle class person such as Jane, who also has, with the power of her education and her independence and all this other stuff, can make certain choices. Blanche is born into a role that she has like one path. It's be pretty, be accomplished, attract a man, get a household, be secure, have children. That's it. And so she, I think, as much as we don't like a lot of the stuff that she does, I feel like it's so hard to be a nice person when that is like your role in society and that's kind of the box that you're in. So I don't blame her at all.
It's so interesting because of the characters that I like, we talk about this every time we talk about Charlotte Bronte character, which is they have so much depth. They're so three-dimensional. They're so people, like, this is the popular girl in your high school who was like nice to her crush and to his face. And then like when you guys were in a room alone together, like you saw her being a bitch and you were like, I would be so much better for him if he would just look at me, like fully Taylor Swift. Just again, I've been watching a lot of Taylor Swift's, like there's a song that she has that the name is escaping me, although I could sing it, but I won't. Where she's like saying she wears short skirts and I wear sneakers. Like, it's just, I'm not like other girls. Mm-hmm. Like, that's absolutely the same thing that Charlotte Bronte is writing here. Like, but I think that there's something about the power that Blanche has that is so, sorry about Ruth's barking.
That's okay.
That is so interesting in that power dynamic that you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think society, it still has this to an extent, but there's this really strict idea of like, it is inherently better to be in Blanche's position than Jane's. Like, that is society has no qualms on that. Like, mm-hmm. that's not a debatable point in this society. But you're right. Like, in some ways, Jane has more freedom than Blanche does. Like, if Blanche went off and became a governess somewhere, that would be a massive scandal. Mm-hmm. Like, that is an unacceptable option for her.
Yeah.
Even if that's what she would want to do, which I think about that kind of stuff a lot because I'm like, I would want to, I would get so bored. Like, just be, like, I'm not somebody who could be pretty and get married, like, for a lot of reasons. But, like, I could, like, running a household would be really, like, fun and interesting and challenging and, like, uses your mind and all of that stuff. But, like, if I was in a position that Blanche was in, like, I go back and forth on her so much from hating her because I think she is hateable mm-hmm. to having this incredible empathy for her because I think she's so empathetic.
Right.
Because you imagine this woman who's like notoriously gorgeous. Mm-hmm. She's done all the right things because mm-hmm. she's accomplished. And that's all you're supposed to do is learn how to play piano, learn how to do this art, like learn how to become somebody who deserves a husband, but her pool of who she can marry is so narrow.
Yeah.
Because they have to be within a certain societal standard. Mm-hmm. Her family is like essentially some level of aristocrat, if not like some level of like royal or something.
Yeah. Because they refer to a Lord Ingram, Lord and Lady Ingram. So, yeah.
Yeah. So they're titled, mm-hmm. but she has no inheritance. She has no massive amount of money. Like, she in so many ways is in a really similar position to what Rochester was in when he was married off to Bertha, mm-hmm. except with the opposite problem. Like, not the opposite problem, because they have money. So yeah. She needs to marry someone with money. Mm-hmm. And it makes it sympathetic to me that obviously she doesn't like Rochester.
Yeah.
Like, that's okay.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that's okay and like people today in society should go after people they don't have romantic feelings for, but that's not a core value that she shares with anyone. Like, mm-hmm. that's not her concern because 25 is such an interesting age to make her.
Yeah.
Because that's 6 years older than Jane.
Right.
And that makes her someone who has been out in society. Like, women, we have this idea that women would come out like very young, like at 16. Some of them would come out at like 18 or 20. Mm-hmm. So even if she came out at like an older age for that, she's still been out in society for a while doing this song and dance. And she's in this precarious position and I'd be pissed.
Right. Well, that's the thing that I think when you talked about like the sympathy that you can feel for a Blanche. And we do get this sympathy to an extent from Jane later, mm-hmm. once she and Rochester are engaged and she confronts him, that whole scene where she's like, you have to tell me one truth. And he's like, oh God, what? And she's like, why did you make me believe you loved Blanche Ingram? And he's like, woohoo, I can answer that one.
Is it about what the laughter is? Because I really don't want to cover that one, Jane. Give me a year and a day, please.
But so there's a moment in that scene when she's like, shame on you. How dare you use her in that way? And so that's, I think, one of the biggest things that is so tragic about Blanche's role in this is that narratively, to an extent, but also mainly the way that Rochester views Blanche, I don't think he sees her as a person with feelings. He sees her as a pawn to move on his chessboard so that Jane will reveal her queen and he can attack. Like, and he says later too, he's like, no. She is, he calls her prideful and in need of humbling. That's like the quote that he says about Blanche. And I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. You had no care for this lady. You just took up months of her life that she could be mm-hmm. using trying to court someone who actually cares for her. And I feel like that's very inconsiderate and cruel of him.
Or at least, because I again, like putting myself in the shoes that Blanche is in, she probably, I don't think she was under the impression that Rochester was in love with her. Mm-hmm. I think she was trying to get him to be infatuated with her and trying to get him to understand the value she could bring to his life mm-hmm. as a wife. Because she, the other thing too is like, think about the societal expectations of a Rochester in this situation. I think the reason, because I was trying to think, like, why does Blanche hate Jane and Adele? And I think it's because it's not a secret that Rochester is going around and fucking all these ladies. That is not a secret. Like, people know he's doing that.
He's rich.
You assume that's his bastard daughter and he's desperately in love with his governess. The assumption society would be making is that that's his mistress.
And they also, the people in the small community would know that he spent years away, like, in Europe. And they're like, what the heck was he doing overseas? Probably not reading books in a church.
Probably not. Just Rochester goes around and reads books in a church. And yeah. That's all. He's just a good little boy.
Yeah.
Because there's an expectation that a man is doing that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, there's also an expectation that a woman like Blanche, who's approaching a man like Rochester, is going to just accept that. That's part of his life. That's his fun little hobby is he goes and fucks opera singers.
That makes me, like, so sad.
And so it does, but it also, like, it makes her attitude about it, like, her bitter, she has this bitterness about her that I think makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't think... It's interesting because I think there's, like, how we read things and what the author intended, and I think those are two different things, and they can be two different things. Mm-hmm. But I'm very interested in this idea that I think that Bronte didn't like Blanche, but I also think she has an understanding of how people get to that place.
Maybe. I was kind of leaning more towards when thinking about how Bronte writes Blanche, and especially how Jane thinks about Blanche, it really made me think of the stuff that we learned from that crappy documentary that at least has some mm-hmm. information that this story is essentially based on the fact that Charlotte fell in love with a professor who was a married man, and I think thought bad thoughts about his wife, kind of the way that Jane thinks about Blanche. And so when I now, like, reading back over these passages and these scenes that feature Blanche, all I could think of is I'm like, Charlotte, were you just being like, is this your real life fan fiction of, like, and then that jerk who was so mean and didn't deserve him and didn't appreciate his beauty, even though he looks like a potato. I like potatoes. She doesn't get potatoes are cool. Like, just writing this into her novel and then putting it out there. And I'm like, I feel like this is your diary as well. And so, I don't know. Maybe, hopefully, because she has so much more depth. You're right. There is elements of that there. And I think there is an understanding of the difficulties of the system and the women who have to maneuver it. But yeah, I feel like it's a bit of both.
I think, yeah, I don't think that she's like, Blanche and I would be friends. I think she's like, no, I hate this kind of woman. It's terrible. But I think there's an understanding of, like, they're also in a terrible situation.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that somebody who can write a book like Jane Eyre has so little understanding of what it is to be a human being.
Yeah.
That I bet she has sympathy for that guy's terrible wife that she hates.
Probably.
Like, I bet she's... Now, there's the two main characters who make choices in this, Jane and Rochester, there's a, I like, the only right word for it is selfishness. Like, I don't think in a bad way. I think in a way that she's trying to say we should have a certain level of selfishness, but there is a selfishness to those characters that I think Charlotte Bronte is suggesting we all have a little bit more of.
Yeah.
And it's individuality almost, mm-hmm. that the characters who don't have that are the ones who are so hateable. And in so many ways, Blanche is a representation of what forcing yourself into this aristocratic woman mold looks like.
Right. I think, and I feel like I'm about to maybe accidentally plagiarize some stuff that was said from the Hot and Bothered podcast when they were talking about Blanche in this way. But again, there's this whole idea of, I think we get a sense of this kind of scorn that Jane has for not only Blanche, but the other women at this party, mm-hmm. who are so sort of like flighty. And definitely Rochester has this opinion of these women of they're like, oh, well, all they do is like talk about the weather and like play their little pianos and dress up and go to parties. They don't contribute anything. They don't like think deeper, darker thoughts and brood in a corner like cool edgy kids do. But then the thing is that they haven't had both the hardships to require that, but then also the opportunity to expand mm-hmm. their minds in different ways. At least not the way that, like, I mean, Jane has these, like, deep, intense thoughts because of her, like, childhood, because of the way mm-hmm. she sought independence, which is something that I feel like, not to say that a woman in Blanche's position could not be interesting and have, like, thoughts beyond, like, what society deems, but I feel like it's something that wasn't ever presented to her as an opportunity. Yeah. I think Blanche is someone who's very much molded not only by society, but then obviously by her insane mother and all this other stuff. So it's the influences, I think, that was put on her and the lack of opportunity she was given that I think adds a lot to why she is the way she is.
And it's also one of those things where if you spend your whole life forcing yourself into a box and you get really good at being in that box, and then you watch other people who aren't in that box, you're going to be the most angry about that because you did the right thing.
Right.
You did the thing you were told to do. Right. You were told to not say anything interesting except for talk about the weather and your needlepoint.
Like, yeah.
That's what you were told you were supposed to be doing. And it would piss you off if you did the thing you were supposed to do, because if you do that, then you get this.
Right.
And then you watch somebody else do something else and they don't do that. Like, totally. I also think part of Rochester's disdain for her is the fact that he could have been someone like her, that he was someone like her, that when he went off to the West Indies mm-hmm. and married Bertha, he was her.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. I also was thinking about this when I was making my notes on the other characters, because I feel like, especially when we start talking about Celine, we'll go into this, but the way that Celine is mostly portrayed is someone who essentially just used him for his money. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because he recognizes that Blanche is looking to essentially secure her security, she's like looking to get married. She wants to marry a wealthy man. I think Rochester is only thinking about the fact that she is trying to marry wealth and not why. He's like, oh, mm-hmm. she just wants me for her money. This is just going to be Celine all over again. I'm sure she's as shallow as a puddle. This woman has no deeper thoughts other than, you know, playing her piano and saying that I'm handsome, even though I'm not. And so, mm-hmm. but it's like, it's, well, this is her entire life has been like, hey, you have no money, so you better be beautiful. So get out there, girl, and like catch that guy. So it's like, mm-hmm. there's a reason why she does these things that we can understand. At least I can.
Yeah. And just because I understand her doesn't mean that I want to hang out with her.
No.
I think, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I hate Blanche.
She is very rude. And one other note that I made is that, so I think it's interesting that we get to see how Blanche is when she is with Rochester, because that's kind of like an act that she's putting on. She's very flirty. She's very performative, saying things that she thinks he wants to hear. But then we also see her after he's left to go put on his gypsy costume. When she's just hanging out with the party and she's described as much more of this kind of like jerk who's just like, you know, dismissive of people and demanding. So we do see that, like, even when he's not around, she has these rather unpleasant personality traits. Mm-hmm. So agreed. I'm not out here saying Blanche is my best friend and I love her to bits, but I'm saying I feel bad for her and I understand her situation.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I also think she could be an Aunt Reed. Like,
right.
One of our listeners a while ago, when we were talking about how much we hate St. John, said that broccoli is what St. John's grow up into, which I thought was really interesting. And I also think that a Blanche grows up into a Aunt Reed, right? Like, mm-hmm. that those choices that she makes and the place that she's in, like, imagine a Blanche is left in Thorn, like, did marry Rochester, is left in Thornfield, promises Rochester to take care of, oh, I don't know, Adele. And then Mr. Rochester dies. Like, what does she do with that? Mm-hmm. Like, she's gonna be as cruel to Adele as Aunt Reed was to Jane. And it doesn't change the fact that she's an empathetic character to me. I think she sucks and I feel bad for her.
If you ever wanted to know why you should join Patreon, it's because sometimes you get to see Piper pause the podcast to literally hawk a loogie. I've been sick and I had phlegm in my throat and I'm so sorry.
I clapped because I was going to edit that out. So I did like three little claps. If you see all of this, it's because I fully forgot to do that. And this is all for you. And thank you for being a patron.
Your money helps me buy cough medicine so I don't die of the Black Plague. Thank you.
Piper fully has the Black Plague. oh my gosh.
I was nodding profusely, but I agree wholeheartedly with everything you just said, Lillian.
Yeah, I think one other thing that I have here. I pulled out a bunch of passages about Blanche and her stuff. And I just have a couple of things. I think one of my favorite things is I love seeing this in an adaption because it's so good and I couldn't believe that it was in the text when we read it. It's one of my favorite Rochester going full crazy moments. It's during the proposal. It's when he's still insisting, like, he's like, Jane, you're gonna have to get a new situation. I wonder what that situation's gonna be. Probably Ireland, right? And she says something about, like, you're gonna be married soon. And he responds with, exactly, precisely. And all, like, the dashes are in those words. Mm-hmm. And when actors read those right, it's my favorite. But he says gross things like, I'm gonna take Miss Ingram to my bosom. and then he talks about what a terrible person she is, which is so insane.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't, the lack of awareness of his role in this situation of, like, Blanche has done a lot of crappy things. She has a crappy personality. I don't want to be friends with her. She doesn't deserve what Rochester did to her.
No, seriously not. And especially, like, and we'll go into this more, especially when we talk about Giacinta and Clara, but, like, Rochester saying bad things about these women to Jane, it's kind of like a weird, like, off-brand of, like, what is it called? Negging? When you, like, insult a girl to make her fall in love with you, but instead he's insulting other women, and it's like, weird tactic, dude.
It's like if you met a guy and you're like, all my ex-girlfriends are crazy. And you're like, were they?
I also, before we move on to Celine, I just want to mention, I think it's very significant that literally the first time Blanche is described, like, she has an artificial, like, social title of the Honorable Blanche Ingram. Mm-hmm. She's not just Blanche. She is the Honorable. And I think it's so interesting because right away, I think the first thing we get is knowing this is how this woman is perceived in society. Society says this lady is, like, top tier. She is the expensive bottle on the shelf. She's what people should want, which it makes sense. That's why Rochester is pursuing her now. Jane, you are not that. And it's like, just put there right in your face. And I think it's very interesting to be like, don't forget.
Yeah. I also think that's really interesting. I also, there's so many things about her that I find really intriguing. And like I said, like, of the characters that we know, the ones that I go back and forth on the most, like, to the most extreme, is Jane. I don't go back and forth on. I'm a Jane stan all day, every day. Rochester, I go back and forth on, not quite as extreme. Bertha, I could spend another 6 hours talking about for the podcast. But then I really do think that it's Blanche is the next one for me that I'm like, I hate you and I understand you and I want to give you a hug And I also would love to just smack you across your little face.
We were just talking about fan fiction before we jumped on this podcast, and I haven't decided yet where I'm going to dip my creative toes, but I feel like Blanche deserves almost a Reluctant Immortals treatment of, can we just please do a, oh my God, I'm not going to write this, but we need, what if Wicked, but it's Jane and Blanche, and Jane, oh, or Blanche is Glinda. So comes off across as like this perfect, like kind of mean, like popular girl. But what if she had a heart of gold and she's struggling because of society's demands of her?
And I think Glinda is such a good parallel, like, because Glinda as a character, if you don't know Wicked, pause this podcast, go
listen
watch
to the whole
Wicked,
soundtrack.
Come
yeah.
right back. It's good. It's worth it.
Yes.
But I think that's such a great parallel because Glinda is also someone who is actively doing harm in society. Like, she is actively perpetuating systems and other problematic things in a way that is hurting people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not her intention.
Right.
And she didn't, she also like really puts herself in that box. Like, I could see a Blanche singing a song like,
thank goodness is the song.
Yes. And she has that line where she says, happiness is what happens when all your dreams come true. Mm-hmm. Isn't it?
Right. It's that.
And then she talks, about the way that things happen. And yeah.
No, anyway. It's beautiful. I could do a whole episode just talking about Thank Goodness because I adore that song and like the layers it reveals about. You're like, no one is two-dimensional, just so you know. Everyone has struggles and problems.
It's so good. And it's what happens when you get everything you thought you wanted and it turns out you were wrong.
Right. Yeah. And so let's move on to Celine, if you're ready.
Really quick, if we can talk about some of the interpretations of Blanche, and she's the only one that we'll do that for.
Okay.
But I have four adaptions that I specifically want to mention, and I'll just go through them all really quick. But the 43, the 83, the 2006, and the 2011. And I don't know if we want to talk about them in order because they're all ones that we've talked about the Blanche before in. The 43, I think, is of the three that I put on here, the least representative of the book.
Doesn't she, if I'm remembering right, because I feel like it's been a long time since we watched the 43, and I'm going to keep talking, assuming that Lillian can hear me. But I feel as if I remembered there was a scene in that one where, you're right, I don't think the Blanche is written similar to the way in the novel, but there is a scene where Blanche herself, I think, gets a bit more agency because she's the one who, like, confronts Rochester to be like, what are you doing, dude? Like, I have self-respect too. Jane isn't the only one who has self-respect. I'm not going to be treated this way. And I loved about that.
Yeah, they have a moment where there's sort of an acknowledgement of the societal game that they're playing. And she goes, so I'm not, you were playing me and we're not doing anything, right? And he kind of goes, yeah, but like, I respect your game. And it's interesting because that is that's the reason why I added that one in this list, is because she's the only one, that's the only one where she does something like that. And I think it's an interesting choice to make. I think it's an interesting interpretation of the idea that Blanche knows what's happening. Like, she gets it, but I think she gets it and is pissed off about it.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. As I think she has the right to be like, dude, I just lost 6 months on you. I could have been over there with that guy. He wants to see these biddies. Like, come on.
But the one that I think is the most book accurate to the Blanche, at least when I was picturing Blanche, is the 83.
Yes, yes. The way that she looks, you mean? Just
the way she looks, the way she acts. Like, something else that I like was remembering like as I was reading this is like, Rochester, like the way that he's leading this girl on, he fully does like a charades marriage to her.
I know.
And like, they actually play that out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, him all like afterwards, he's like, oh, we just got married in front of an audience. That means we're actually man and wife. And she's like, cool, man. Want to make it for real?
Because I would love to fix this house. It's kind of upsetting.
And spooky.
And I think if a woman was here, it wouldn't be so upsetting. And he's like, little do you know.
He's like, there goes my actual girlfriend. Bye.
And also my wife's upstairs.
Yeah. He's like, look, Blanche, there are three women in my life right now. And you are on the bottom of the list.
One, very stressful. One, pawn in my game. Third, it's gonna save my whole life. I'm sure it's gonna be fine once I get Jane to fall in love with me. All the dominoes will be set up just so.
Lillian, can we please have an encore of your beloved character, Rochester's inner monologue? Being like, Rochester, you sly dog.
Rochester, you son of a gun. Yeah. You did it again. You set everybody up. You're so good at being a gypsy. Everyone totally believed you. And Blanche is absolutely going to change fundamentally as a person now. And everything's going to be better in her life because she understands how shallow and useless she is.
Well done. We missed you, inner voice of Rochester.
This time Lillian got mad in the middle, so it stopped being funny.
Okay, so yes, I agree. Visually, I think she's great. I have little memory of the performance apart from her just kind of being snooty and like dismissive of Adele, but
yeah, I think my memory of the performance is similar to my memory of the 83 in general. Timothy Dalton stealing the show, as you would expect, and also just like technically that's how the book went.
Yeah,
like if you want to see how the book went, that's technically how it went. So the next one on my list is 2006, she's like who I picture when I think of Blanche.
Yeah,
even though she's very blonde,
she's like the fairy tale princess. There's that scene where she mm-hmm. literally comes out looking like a Cinderella, and we get long moments in that one when they're in like the drawing room. They really play those scenes out, and they lean into her kind of talk, like almost bragging about how much she used to like bully her governess, which is like, again, similar to Rochester being like, hey, so all the women I've ever known are pieces of crap, but not you, baby. Similar to like her being like, oh, I used to torment people when I was little. Aren't I cute? It's like, you maybe deserve each other, actually. Both of you assholes bragging about how you're mean to other people and better than other people.
Which I think, like, yeah, you did it. Cherry on top. Like, another moment that is, like, for me, a classic Blanche moment is when, right before the cutest flirting with the Money Matters, the stuff, when she comes up and, like, Jane is, like, trying to kind of get Rochester's attention, like, walking near him in the room. She goes, that creature is looking for you. I think she plays that very well in the adaption.
There's a similar scene in the 80s one, but in the 80s one, she and Rochester are playing billiards. And that, I'm just like, okay, maybe this is Blanche's secret thing. She's like a billiards card shark. She's really good at the game, but she, you know, plays the sweet, like, oh, how do you play this with the ball and the sticks? Tee-hee, teach me. And then late at night, she's in there, like, playing a perfect game on their dad's billiards table. Love this idea. New headcanon. Yeah.
Okay, great. That's perfect. Because I also, like, I think one of the things that makes me both hate Blanche and have a lot of empathy for her is I think a lot about what kind of person I would become if I was in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I would be fun to be around. Like, I think I might be a bitch.
If you had to play the game that Blanche has to play?
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Especially if I was playing it as long as she'd been playing it with the same stakes that she had.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I cannot draw to memory. Oh, no, I can. The Blanche from 2011. What I mostly remember mm-hmm. of her is them playing that stupid little feather game out in the gazebo. And I'm like,
she's wearing a great dress for that.
It is a great dress. Yeah. But I remember just seeing that and I'm like, this is dumb and weird.
I feel like she's the most, like, it's so interesting because I think the 2006 plays the Blanche I hate mm-hmm. well. And I think the 2011 plays the Blanche I have sympathy for well. Because mm-hmm. there's actually a deleted scene that we watched for a rewatch where her mother is being like, you need to get him to marry you. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what should I do? Like, I'm doing all the things. What do you want from me? And it's very clear that, like, I think she's the woman I described with the most empathy, and that's super intentional in the 2011 that they play her really empathetic, where she's trying to get Rochester because she's supposed to want to get Rochester.
Yeah. I also want to mention, just for the sake of throwing it out there, because I think it's a thing in the Kieran Hines version. Got it right. That they, when they're doing their shopping trip, they run into Blanche in town, and she already has some other wealthy geezer waiting for her. And there's almost kind of this mm-hmm. moment where she's like, well, you know, it was fun while it lasted, but back in the game, I already got somebody else, so I'm fine. And
doesn't the mom say, like, this is Lord so-and-so?
Yeah, something like that. And so that's an interesting choice, because I'm like, okay, at least we know now that she's got somebody, like, to provide mm-hmm. for her or something. So I kind of like seeing that instead of her just being the sad bachelorette back in the game. It's just like, oh no, Blanche.
She'll go, if I know, have learned anything from the many, many historic romances that I've read, she'll go do a season in London and she'll have those guys eating out of the palm of her hand. It'll be great.
Perfect. So let's talk about Celine, the French opera dancer. So
that is one, you mentioned the Hot and Bother podcast. Mm-hmm. That is one where a lot of my context for Celine comes from that podcast.
Okay, cool. One thing that I want to point out to know, which I can't say for certain if this was something that was considered when writing Celine's character, but I know that it was for a while in certain circles. Ballerinas were somewhat treated like prostitutes. And it was this whole thing where you kind of needed a patron. It was like expensive mm-hmm. to like go to these ballet houses or these schools and to be a ballerina. And so it was common that like you would have sort of like an older patron who would like provide for you. But in addition to like them making sure that you could have this career, it was also expected that you would sleep with them. Mm-hmm. Actually saw an amazing short animation film all about that. That was really great. But so I think that's interesting to note, because whether or not Rochester went into this romance with Celine with the idea that she was essentially like a paid mistress, an escort, a prostitute, the fact that he does have a sexual relationship with her and is also providing for her and she's in this career, I think it's pretty safe to say that's kind of what was going on there.
And I think that is like essentially being a mistress was like their second job, is my understanding of it. And I did look into to try to see like how much would an opera singer have made at this time. And it doesn't seem like Celine was a famous opera singer or anything. She just was like one of the ones.
She's an opera dancer.
That was out there.
Yeah.
Is she an opera dancer?
Dancer, not a singer. But I think that's meant to imply sense. That she's essentially like doing like ballet and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So being in the opera, like the way that they made money was based off of a percentage of ticket prices. And the reason that I know this is because I did a Goog and found this incredibly researched paper on it that has like all, like it has like, here's how much money French operas were making at the time. And wow. Here's how much like the average opera, whoever would like make and like all this stuff. They made like 4% of ticket sales if you were like spread across all of the people in the show. And ticket sales were not a lot because opera didn't make a huge amount of money. It would really only make money for like the owner of the opera. And even then it was sort of a risky venture. And it just made me think about like that starving artist trope that we still have today. Like, and that I say trope, but like thing that happens to people. Like, essentially, there's no other good second job that you can get other than be hot and find someone to pay for your living. Mm-hmm. Because these women were also, like a Blanche would never go be an opera dancer. Mm-hmm. That you're right, like that they're essentially being like a sex worker was basically all they could do. And the way that was referred to is buying a mistress, which he specifically says, hiring a mistress. Like when he's in chapter 27, that's how he refers to what he's done with these women. So he knew he was doing that, mm-hmm. but he didn't think of it in this realistic way. But I also like, fuck him, essentially, is like my response to that is it's, he has this, it sucks for him that he's this romantic guy who doesn't have an outlet for that, mm-hmm. but be realistic about what you're doing. That's like going, like, no offense to any, but like, that's like going to a strip club today and then being like, yeah, I paid the stripper like $1,000 for a dance in the back room. And then I found out she's also dating someone else because she loves him.
No, it's very much like, this is, I think Celine is his first kind of like angry, betrayed, heartbroken rebound. Mm-hmm. So at least I assumed, because the way that he talks about the mistresses in the mm-hmm. order he speaks of them is Celine, Giacinta, and then Clara. So I assume Celine was his first flame after putting Bertha in the attic and then effing off to Europe. So he finds this girl and he's like, cool, I'm going to be your patron daddy. It's going to be great. We're in love, I hope, maybe. and he talks a lot about in those, like, in telling this story to Jane about how, even though she, I don't have the exact phrase written down, but she claimed to, like, prefer his unconventional looks to that of, like, an Adonis or something like that. Mm-hmm. So she, like, flattered him and all this stuff, which is something that is a pattern of most of the women that he talks about. He, when talking about Bertha, he's like, oh, she flattered me, said, I don't care that you're an ugly little spud, I'll be with you. And then turns out, oh no, she's off doing sex with other guys. Same thing with Celine. She's like, I don't care that you're a weird little tater man. Whoops, I have a hot soldier boyfriend. Surprise, I do care. And then here too with Blanche, when she's trying to flirt with him, and she's like, oh, who needs pretty men? I think uggos are great. She's like, he is, every woman he meets is like, it's fine that you're not hot, but you got money, right? And so then when Jane comes along and he's like, what are you gonna tell me that? And Jane's like, no, I'm not gonna lie to you. I can hardly breathe right now. So it's a breath of fresh air. So funny to me. Anyway, I guess just wanted to bring up that pattern.
Yeah, I think while Piper gets her giggles out, I think that the interesting point that I feel like you're making is it actually puts Jane in this other category of, like, it makes it. I've always found it so fucking weird that he's like, do you think me handsome, Jane? Like, and it makes that make so much more sense,
because he's
that
used,
he's
to this.
Like, she's like, no dude, you're so fugly. And he's like, oh my god. I think I'm in love with you.
It's like that audio clip that's trending where it's like, if you don't stop being mean to me, I'm gonna fall in love with you. And the person's like, what did you say? And he's like, perfect. That's Rochester.
That's from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and I love it. That's nice. Such a good. you seem to, like, you're indifferent or mean to me, which makes you totally my type.
So good.
But I think, yeah, I think that's really, that's an interesting point that all of these women, which that's the other thing too, is like, that's like a guy today being super pissed that you laughed at his jokes, even though you didn't think they were funny. Like, literally were told to do that when we were teenagers,
right?
But like, just laugh at guys' jokes, it makes them feel really good. Don't, here's my advice, don't do it, because then it just makes the guys not funny and they think that they're funny and they actually aren't.
So again, I want to focus on this idea of an unreliable narrator.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, just to say, I have a note that at one point while he's describing Celine's story in his life, he literally stops to grind his teeth and then continues to talk about it. I'm like, yeah, you don't have any hostility towards this woman. You shouldn't be questioning your judge of her character.
You're super sane, dude. It's too bad that your wife was so crazy and also, like, so out there just, like, being vulgar and indulging when you were being such a good husband and definitely didn't lock her away in a room while you went to fuck your way across Europe.
But the other thing that I am wondering now, when talking about the way that every other woman in his life apparently, like, made a point to be like, look, you're no spring chicken, but I'll be with you anyway, is, again, this is all something that Rochester is telling us, right? Mm-hmm. We never see a conversation as a third person narrator where we actually see what's happening here. So maybe similarly to his interaction with Jane, he, like, win at these ladies. I think this might also just be a case of a man with very low self-esteem. Like, maybe he's totally fine, but he's like, hey, am I hot? And they're like, I mean, you look like a guy. And he's like, oh no, I'm hideous. It's like, no dude, just chill out.
Well, it really comes back to that, like, the stripper was nice. Like, it's the barista was nice to you because it's her job, not because she thinks that you're wants to read your screenplay, right? Like, that's it. There's this podcast that I listen to where they used to have this whole thing about don't hit on women at their work because it's not a lady zoo. Mm-hmm. It's the idea that, like, Rochester feels betrayed by these women being so manipulative when it's their job. Like, that's how they're making a living. Mm-hmm. So I understand why that would feel so betraying for him. But also, like, it's one of the things that really it pushes to me again the idea that, like, in so many ways, Rochester is so naive.
Yes.
Like, and I think it's just an interesting idea of, like, that. It does make you wonder, like, why would Rochester have this thing with Bertha and then come back and go, like, have all these mistresses? But I think it's answering a question of, why wouldn't he go have a mistress? Like, why does he want to marry Jane instead of just, like, find someone else who's cool with the arrangement and doesn't really care? And this is really answering that question of, like, he thought they loved him. Like, he didn't get that. And that's what he wanted. He wanted, like, a real relationship and a real connection. Mm-hmm. And he kept finding women whose job it is to, like, who, and the other thing that I want to say too is, like, it's their job because they don't have another choice.
I was going to kind of comment on that. I was like, when you say job, similar to how Blanche, or in her position, all she can do is husband hunt. That's, like, the only option for her. For these women, which I think it's safe to assume that they're in, like, a lower class, to have these kind of more, like, you know, working women jobs, and also, like, sex work, essentially, or to be a mistress kind of a thing. Yeah, it is a matter of, like, well, you don't come from a fine family who can help you find a husband that will take care of you. And if you don't want to, like, just go get, like, another kind of trade and you're pretty, then you can, like, you know, enter into this kind of contract with wealthy men. And there's just, yeah, it's sort of that, it's not necessarily a job per se, but it is, like, this is how you will be supported and how you will have your security, which is, like.
And I think it was almost, like, it wasn't seen with the level of respectability of a job, but, like, it was understood that that was an acceptable thing to do.
Yeah.
And it was I did some Googling to make sure, based because I heard about it on the Hot and Bothered podcast, but, like, that was the understanding of what was happening. Like, mm-hmm. people knew that that's what was going on and that, like, men would have mistresses that they would pay money to. Like, and I also, it's interesting the idea that, like, if they didn't want to do something else, sometimes they didn't have a chance to do something else too. Like, yeah. They're genuinely, like, if you think about it, if you aren't in a position where, like, if you don't have any skills and you don't have any education and you don't have any of these other things, like, being pretty and being able to be an opera dancer was a better option than being on the streets. Mm-hmm. There was, like, for a lot of time, and I don't know when exactly, but, like, before the Industrial Revolution and stuff, like, there wasn't even an option to go work in a factory. Like, right. That's not a choice they had.
Yeah.
At the time that we're talking about with Celine, because this is a few years before, like, she probably didn't have a lot of other choices. Mm-hmm. And even if they were, like, if I had a choice between being, like, having a guy that paid for my apartment and stuff, but sometimes he showed up and I had to pretend I thought he was pretty. and working in a factory at the time. I mean, speaking of that documentary, we heard enough about what those towns look like that's not a choice I want to make. Yeah. No, thank you.
No, thank you at all. That context, though, that you are kind of shining a light on, that it makes me kind of go, like, oh, Rochester, you poor dumb idiot. Like, yeah, the fact that like you call into, like, a 1-800, like, sex line service and you're like, so we have a real relationship, right? And it's like, no, like, I'm a lady on a phone that you talk to. We're not actually a thing. Like, I thought you knew that. So he just doesn't. Yeah, I think he wants that love and he probably shouldn't have jumped into this after immediate, like, weird, I'm married to a mad woman heartbreak. So maybe those lines are fuzzy for him. But yeah, I think he went into it with a certain expectation. And maybe he did love her, but maybe it was just lust and the desire for attention. I mean, he talks about love in reference to Celine, and he also uses Celine as his way to introduce this concept of jealousy, and that you could only feel jealousy, you can only know love once you've known jealousy. And he, in talking about that in context with Celine, says to me, because I do love Rochester. I'm not a Rochester hater all across the board. But I think this poor guy did actually, like, fall in love with this lady. And, like, Moulin Rouge and every other thing. It's like, no, you don't fall in love with a prostitute. You don't do that.
I think he fell in love with her in the way that, like, I've seen friends with their, like, first boyfriend or whatever. Like, or my first boyfriend. Especially since I'm not into men. I very much like it. You very much like think that you're playing the role of being someone in a relationship, and she was playing that role back with him. So I think he loved the relationship. I don't think he even knew her. And frankly, I don't think he bothered to get to know her. But there's another thing kind of with the idea of mistresses that I want to talk about. So hiring mistresses, there's a line in this that we simply have to talk about. I wish I didn't have to talk about this, you guys. You know I love us. You know I'm always reluctant when I bring my sad facts, but I have to. So a thing that Bronte does a lot is talk about slavery.
I have this passage marked too. We have to read white the whole women thing.
Don't. I'll pull out this. Do you want the whole thing or just the one sentence?
Oh, I'm going to read the whole thing.
Okay, you go ahead and read the whole thing then.
Okay. So this is where Rochester super loses me, as I said, in the, like, would you, like, go with him or not? After talking about these other ladies that he was with, he says, "Hiring a mistress is the next worst thing to buying a slave. Both are often by nature and always by position inferior. I now hate the recollection of the time I passed with Celine, Giacinta, and Clara." He's saying they're inferior and that it's degrading to associate with them.
Yeah. So the two things that I want to say, because I think this might be, this will probably lead us right into talking about these two other women as well. The first thing that I have to say is no, it's not. It's not the same as buying a slave, because I genuinely think that is a point Charlotte Bronte is trying to make, is that these women are being put in the same position as slaves. No, they're not. That is, like, a hot take feminism. Like, that is, like, a white feminist take all the way. It is a bad situation. It is not something that I think, it is absolutely something where those women didn't have choices. They didn't have freedoms. There was lots of very bad structural oppressive things that happened to women who are in those kinds of positions.
But they can leave.
It is not the same as slavery.
They can
as
leave.
As Piper so concisely put it. They can leave. Like, being a slave was so much worse than that. It's a different form of, like, power dynamics and oppression and all of those things. But it's not the same as being a slave, especially not a slave in the Caribbean during this time.
Yeah.
Oh my God, no.
But also, so as we said, weird move, Rochester, when trying to convince the woman you're in love with to stay with you by putting down other women. You're also now saying that you view a mistress as essentially a slave, as someone who is inferior to you, not worth associating with. And since he can't get a divorce and he wants Jane to go live with him in sin, he's essentially saying, you will become my mistress. And by the way, here's my thesis statement of what I think of mistresses. They suck.
Just like, well,
what are you doing?
And he's like, I think he's answering the like question of, well, why not just go get a mistress? Because that would be it's like very similar. That would be the answer other men would have. Is like, your wife is crazy. Beat her until she's not crazy. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. Because Rochester's not like other boys. He is essentially saying, like, he wanted something more substantial than that, and that this wasn't substantial. But what he's not saying, but is, like, what he's saying, but isn't what he intends to say here, is also, like, the power dynamic is gross, and you're the gross one here. Like, you, those women are not inferior to you. You suck!
Mm-hmm. We have big feelings about this.
We're doing great.
No, it's bizarre. And I think at least to Bronte's credit, because it's this part that she gives to Rochester, she is not condoning this, in my opinion, mm-hmm. because the line at the end, at least in my book, at the end of the page, she then says, "To become the successor of these poor girls, he would one day regard me with the same feeling which now in his mind desecrated their memory. I did not give utterance to this conviction. It was enough to feel it. I impressed it on my heart that it might remain there to serve me as an aid in the time of trial." And so it's just like, at least she's like, okay, so he said this awful thing. And I'm like, whoo, it's all I need to know. I'm out. But I'm going to keep that in mind when I remember how swoony and romantic he was. Remember that time he's told you that all mistresses are essentially slaves and they suck. Oh, and by the way, he wants you to be his mistress now. Mm, got it. Right. Okay. Moving forward.
Yeah. And also I think it's, I don't want to keep using the words they're equivalent to slaves. Like, I think the important thing that he's saying, because I do think Charlotte Bronte was saying that they're equivalent to slaves, and I think she's wrong. The thing that is true is he thinks they're less than him. Mm-hmm. He thinks people who are in a position of poverty where they're left with fewer choices, and so the choice that they make is to be a mistress and essentially be sex workers, makes them less than him mm-hmm. as people, mm-hmm. fundamentally and unworthy of his love.
Yeah.
And those, that dude, that version of Rochester sucks.
Yeah. So if we want to very briefly attempt to try and like say, okay, like, is this coming, is he saying all these things from a place of being hurt multiple times in love? Not that it justifies him saying these awful things about these women, but if we are trying to like kind of be on like team Edward Rochester kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So if it is the case, you know, he found himself in this unfortunate situation with his wife and he didn't want to hospitalize her. So he brought her to his house and he put her there with a caregiver and he went off to go and try and find love someplace else. Because he said, screw you to convention. He, like a fool, thought that the ballerina that he was sponsoring actually loved him genuinely. Turns out it's a job and she needs support and it's okay mm-hmm. that she's making out with other boys, but this hurts him deeply and he has a big tantrum about it and shoots a man in the shoulder. So now he's kind of angry. So he goes off and he's like, is there love anywhere? And every woman he finds who is going to be in this situation with him, like to be with him romantically without marriage, is only a woman who can do it as a mistress. And so every mm-hmm. person he encounters, he's like, no, like, you are, and these are some of the things he uses to describe Giacinta and Clara, you are unprincipled, you are violent, you are heavy, you are mindless, you are unimpressible. And it's just like, you're looking for a scholar who can discuss the art of poetry while sucking your dick and being okay with no ring on the finger. And it's like, that doesn't exist, my guy. I'm sorry that you were born in this time, but you are here and you have to know what how society works and what you're getting out of it versus what you want to get out of it.
It feels like the kind of guy who on a dating app would say, like, I'm a catch and you ladies are so picky. You want somebody who's not married and has never locked a woman in the attic before? Come on. Like, all of you, I would like a woman who could carry a conversation, please. But I think, I do think, like, if we're going to paint Rochester more sympathetically, I think the only version of Rochester to me in these situations that's sympathetic is naive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think it's, we picture a Rochester who went off and found this beautiful woman who he, and like, he has sort of these romantic notions. Like, we know Rochester well enough to know that he's a romantic. Mm-hmm. He meets her and things go so poorly. And he spends 4 years miserable. Because that's one of the things that's like so easy to forget is he spent 4 years trying to make that work.
Yeah.
He's miserable. She's abusive and terrible to him. He finally comes up with a solution where he can do his best to take care of her. And he also is going to be able to get what he wants. So that broken shell of a man goes to Paris and finds somebody who's nice to him. And he feels so many different things, including, I'm imagining, a massive amount of relief. And just like that elation when you move from a garbage situation to a neutral one. Mm-hmm. To like something that has the potential to be positive. So he walks into this situation almost, I'm imagining like a willing level of ignorance into that situation of like, I'm I want somebody that I can love, and I'm going to treat you like that. He gets burned hard, and he tries again and again and keeps getting put in these situations. Like, I think it was Clara that he describes as, like, essentially dumb. Like, he essentially was like, I kept trying to find nicer, nicer women until I found someone who was so nice, but she was so dumb that I literally couldn't talk to her. And I think it's him figuring out what it is that he wants. Mm-hmm. In the same way that, like, people date in, like, when they're in their early 20s and they're trying to figure out what is it that I want out of a romantic relationship. And he's going, I want somebody who's super hot and really nice to me. And then he goes, just kidding. That was actually her pretending. I'm going to go find somebody else. And he, like, gets to, like, he just finally goes, I just want somebody who's nice and likes me. And he goes, nope, that didn't work either. And that man comes back to England going, I'm pissed. I'm so jaded. Everything is garbage. I'm going to have to check on my ward and my house and, like, make sure everything's fine. And then, honest to God, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then he meets this woman who's kind but intelligent and challenges him and is interesting and, like, all these other things. And I think that's what he's trying to say. Yeah. Is, like, I'm not interested in you just because I've never seen the other options. Mm-hmm. I've seen the other options, and I know you're not like other girls.
The thing that, you know, we talked a lot about this, about what, like, the roles that these women are born into and the freedoms that they have or don't have, more specifically. Mm-hmm. So I think the thing that is kind of my big sort of conclusion about one of the reasons why Jane isn't like these other girls, I mean, yes, you can argue if they were raised in the same setting with the same opportunities, their personalities would still be unique to themselves, and who knows who would be like what. But of all of these women we've talked about, this is maybe their only option. Jane mm-hmm. has options. Where they don't. And so I think, because yes, we've talked about all this stuff of him being like, you know, all these women, they just told me what I wanted to hear, and they were liars, and they didn't care about me, and they wanted my money. And then comes along Jane, who, like you said, you know, talks back to him, challenges him, who upon first inquiry is like, nah, I'm not going to pretend that you're hot. It's about what's inside that counts, you know, like, shock, like, rips the rug out from under his feet with that one. And then also her whole thing about how, like, money is not a motivation for Jane. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the most world shattering thing for Rochester, because all these other women, he's like, they just want me for my money, but they need that, because without it, they'll mm-hmm. die in the streets. They're like, yeah, I need you for your money, because otherwise I'm going to become a Les Mis pulling my teeth out and the tigers come at night. Yeah. And I don't want to do that. Jane has that autonomy and freedom to, like, challenge him in these ways and to, like, stand up to him and have that intelligence that he's looking for. So they didn't have the opportunity to become a Jane.
I think that is, like, that is the ultimately the thing that makes it so hard to be sympathetic to Rochester in this instance, is, like, he keeps being like, these women were so obsessed with me for my money. But he doesn't go to the next thought of, like, I wonder why.
They're like, dude, I had to fight off a bunch of rats last night. So yes, please, can I have $5?
I need someone to pay my rent. I have to live somewhere. So I thought, since you seemed interested in me, I would be nice to you, have sex with you, and you'd pay my rent.
That'd be great, because surprise, surprise, I can't go outside and get a job as a banker. So
I, unlike you, don't have thousands and thousands of pounds sitting around coming in every year because I'm a landowner.
This is a case where money, please, is not just a selfish demand. It is a, hey, I need this to survive. These are basic human necessities that I don't have access to.
Oh my God. So I think that's our final thoughts, right?
Yeah, that's our thoughts. The fifth player, the secret player in this novel is society. It's also
not that secret of a player.
No.
The villain of this is society. And that's given face by, for Rochester, by Celine, who he has no sympathy for. And for Jane, by Broccoli, who I still would like, if there is a heaven for me, it's So I walk into heaven and they're like, hey, is there anybody you would like to kick in the nuts? Because we have a bunch of people in hell who you can just kick in the nuts. And I'm like, hey, you know that guy who inspired broccoli? Is he available? Because I would love to kick him in the nuts.
They're like, ooh, Lillian, get in line.
That line is actually very long. We will put you on the wait list, but just so you know, it's going to be a couple centuries.
They hand you one of those buzzers from Cheesecake Factory and they're like, this will go off when it's your time to kick him in the nuts.
Oh my god, incredible.
You're just having heaven brunch one day and it starts to like do the crawl across the table.
I gotta go.
It's my turn to kick broccoli in the nuts.
I've been waiting so long for this.
Amazing. Incredible. So, yeah, this is the other women of Jane Eyre. Oh, I do think we have to mention this because I feel like people will be like, you left out this detail about Celine. Mm. She did abandon her child. So that is negative points for her.
Cons for Celine, abandons her child, who she definitely could afford to support now that Rochester has left her.
Yeah. So anyway, just throwing that out there.
Yeah, we could have talked about that for a bit. I had some notes on that, but I was getting so pissed at Rochester. We can't do it anymore. Yeah. Because I want to love him.
I know, I want to love him
just
too.
Just let me love him. So next week, speaking of things that we want to love, and my expectations are low, we are going to be watching a recording of a 2004 play that is unique in a way that I just found out about, and I am so excited, which is by a production company called Odd Socks. They still exist, and they tour England, and they do productions where they take classic theater techniques and classic theater productions like Jane Eyre, and they incorporate clowning.
Amazing. So excited.
I can't express enough how reading that on their website changed my entire perspective on life.
Dude, clown time, man. We're going to do clown time. It's going to be great.
I don't know what that's going to mean for it, but I'm very, very, very excited.
Yay. Awesome. Very excited too. So tune into that. If you want to share your thoughts and takes about the other women, the other love interests in this novel, you can tell us all about it on social. We are at Airbuds on all the major social platforms. You can also send us those emails that we love to receive at airbuds@gmail.com. You can give us some money. Because like these ladies that we've been talking about, we also need a little bit of money just to get by.
We need money to live. And also, we haven't even gotten close to the amount of money we've invested in this podcast yet. Shit, sorry. Guys, it's 7 p.m. here.
We spend all of our money on wind chimes, so...
They sound like a phone. They're not.
No. But yeah, if you want to give us $3 or what is it, $8, or what's the highest one?
15.
Woo.
Speaking of, Katie, our Jane, we love you, girl.
We love you, Katie. Thank you. Yay. Yeah, if you want to think of us, think of Lillian and I as your opera dancer, and you are our Rochester. So we'll tell you.
And I'm currently single, so I don't have any soldiers that you'd have to shoot. I think we would have to do more than $15 to let Sam allow you to shoot him in the arm. But we'll ask him about it.
Oh, no.
Sam, you're probably listening. Sam, can you send me an email really quick and say, like, how much money somebody would have to give us to get to shoot you in the arm for the podcast?
See, the real thing here is that Sam gets to enter into the duel, and he's not going to necessarily forfeit. He's just going to full-on fight. So see if you're a better shot than my fiancé who likes to go to gun ranges sometimes.
Whoa! I didn't know! That's a new fact about Sam! The most dangerous thing I knew about Sam is that sometimes when we're doing fires, he'll have the little hatchet that he uses to cut up wood. He'll have a couple of beers. He'll start throwing that in the air, and I'll go, please stop. I'm begging you to stop.
So fight this dangerous man. Give us lots of money.
Or to do more normal things, like get access to seeing our lovely faces on the video recording that we're doing right now. You can just donate $3. You buy us a coffee.
Yeah.
We're doing a trip to Arizona. We're going to need some fuel for that.
Exactly. Iced coffee.
Speaking of.
It's hot in Arizona. Yeah.
Because it's hot in Arizona. We have got to assume. There is so much snow left here. I need to see a ground that doesn't have snow on it.
Exactly. It's important for our mental health, as you can tell from the gradual spiral that we are on. Yeah.
Or Spiral we've always been on. Yeah. It's hard to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, we actually did record an episode tonight. I'm very proud of us.
Woo!
And I'm very proud of you, Piper.
Thank you. Just cuz?
Yeah. Just aww, for being a person in the world.
I'm proud of you too, Lillian. Tell us who you are proud of. Hopefully it's us when you leave us a 5-star review on your podcast of choice.
Yes. Oh, speaking of, we talk a lot about the fact that sometimes we don't actually like read the reviews. Somebody, thank you so much to the listener who went in and updated their review because we mentioned the fact that they gave us 3 stars because we hadn't read the book fair. Mm-hmm. They did revise it to 5 stars. We love you. We appreciate it. They were like, I was maybe a little harsh. I'm like, no, you were fair.
Yeah.
You were fair, but I appreciate that you've grown with us, as has your rating.
Thank you so much. We love you guys. So we hope that you'll tune in next week for this wonderful clowning episode. It will be almost as clowny as this one was. Anyway, happy Jane Eyre reading, watching, and reviewing of Crucial Characters.
Bye.
Bye.